Hi everybody, it's Carol Tice and welcome to 4-Week J School. Linda and I are so excited to put this class on. It has had a response like really nothing we've seen in our other classes. I have seen people writing blog posts about how excited they are and emailing me, and we have a ton of material to get through, and we're going to get to it really shortly. So let's get started. This is the first session of 4-Week Journalism School, and we have designed this class to give you the important basics you need to develop and write compelling stories for top-paying markets. And here is what we will be covering in the months to come. If you can wait and see. So here we are at Session 1, Story Ideas That Sell. Coming up will be News Gathering 101, all about interviews and finding research. And our Class 3 is our Article Writing Intensive. It'll be all about writing an article that's ready to, you know, go in a magazine and knock out an editor and make her want to assign you more stuff. And Class 4 is the Journalism Ethics 101 class that will answer all of your questions about everything that ever made you feel worried or uncomfortable about reporting a story. It's actually a hugely important class. I personally have taken day-long journalism ethics trainings, and I've crammed that all down into 1 hour for you. So that's going to be a great, really packed session. So let's get started with our first session, which is on story ideas that sell. And Linda, I believe, has the first point on this.
Sure. So, you know, just a little bit about finding great story ideas. In freelance journalism, story ideas are the coin of the realm. They're what you need. That your success is based on your ability to come up with really good ideas. And the more story ideas you come up with, the better your odds at getting assignments, because it's kind of a numbers game. So the more you have out there, the more chance you have of success. You could always target trade magazines and custom publishers that assign you ideas that they come up with in-house. But for most consumer pubs, which are those newsstand ones that I know a lot of you want to write for, you'll need a stash of your own story ideas, at least in the beginning, to get editors' attention and convince them that you're a writer they should hire. So in this first session, we're going to look at what makes a good idea, how to cultivate the habit of coming up with lots of story ideas all the time. We both keep lists, Carol and I keep lists of story ideas we can draw from when we need a pitch. And that's what you want to do. Don't let your ideas get away from you. Have some system where you can write them down, whether you have a notebook by your bed or a notebook in your car or a voice recorder or something, and keep them in one place so that, you know, if you find a good market for one, you'll be all set to go with an idea. So first we're going to talk about what makes a saleable idea. And in my Write for Magazines e-course, I critique article ideas, and I have people send me 3 ideas each, and what I see is a lot of underdeveloped ideas. You know, they're good, basic, solid ideas, but they're not quite there yet. But that's okay, because all the ideas we come out with at first that just come out of our brains when we're brainstorming, I call the seeds of ideas. And you need to kind of nurture them until they grow into something that's really saleable. So the first thing is, a good idea has a news hook. And this is something a lot of my students are missing. What makes your idea important now? For example, you might say, I just developed rheumatoid arthritis and I want to write about it. Well, you've been writing about rheumatoid arthritis in the health magazines for years. You know, it's not anything new. So what is it that makes this idea new? This is especially important for evergreen ideas, which are those ideas you see that run month after month in many consumer magazines, like the Walk Off the Belly Fat and Health magazines you see every month. You need to figure out how you can plant an old idea to make it new again. And if you can peg your idea to something in the news, you're more likely to sell it. So, for example, in the case of the rheumatoid arthritis idea, if there is a new study that came out or a new book that came out or a celebrity was just diagnosed with RA or something in the news that you can hang on, then that makes it more of a saleable topic. So as another example, if you want to write about organizing your home, is there a new book coming out on the topic, preferably by somebody well-known? Is there a recent study showing that organizing your home can help you de-stress? Did a celebrity just come out and say that they were a pack rat? Is February National Clean Your Home Month? There are many different ways you can find a news angle. And one more tip on that I like to do is go to Amazon.com, search on your keywords for what you're looking for. So say you're doing rheumatoid arthritis, and then sort the results. There's a little drop-down menu, and instead of doing it by most relevant, do it by date published. And the first ones that come up are going to be books that either have just come out or haven't come out yet, which is really great because those are a great news hook since magazines work so far ahead, which we'll be talking about. If you can say, oh, in 4 months, this book about RA is coming out by this celebrity author, and I want to write about it. So that's a great news hook. The second thing is a good idea needs to be focused. I see a lot of ideas like the bride's top 10 problems solved and wine tasting in New York, and these are way too broad to fit in a lot of magazines. You need to be really narrow. So in the case of the bridal problems, will you be talking about money problems, sex problems, in-law problems? For the wine tasting in New York, what is it that makes it special and worthy of an article? Is there a really great wine tasting area that's often overlooked by tourists? Do the wineries specialize in a certain variety of wine? Is there a winery owner who's doing something really cool? You want to get as narrow as you can with your idea. Carol?
Yeah, right on. The next thing you need in your story idea is that it needs to be broadly appealing to the readers of the publication you are pitching. And if you're wondering who are the readers of the publication I want to pitch, go online and or call them and look for their ad sales side. Look for their media kit. And that will usually give you just a ton of information about who reads the magazine, their income, where they live, are they married, what kind of job do they have. And you can get a pretty good idea. Then you need to know if your idea would appeal to most of those people. If you want to write about a disease and it only affects, 3% of the population, the editor isn't going to be interested because it's not affecting enough of her readers. You want to find a topic that, will have broad appeal within, their readership. So another one, and Linda is really like the queen of this, is to add some twist where there's something surprising or against the conventional wisdom in some way, and presenting an idea that way can be a lot more powerful. And, the one I've got up on the slide is how to drop holiday pounds versus 5 surprising ways to drop holiday pounds. Linda has a bunch of these for you in the handout. 10 things your kid's teacher wishes you knew becomes 10 surprising things your kid's teacher wishes you knew. It just gives the topic a finer focus and tells them that you're cutting off a slice of information that isn't one they're going to have already heard 10 times. You don't have to actually include the word surprising, but thinking about that mentally, about, what's the new angle here that I'm trying to present. And the other thing Linda does a lot is look for opposite ideas or these counterintuitive ideas. So health magazines are always doing, foods you should avoid to stay healthy. So she did an article called Bad Foods Gone Good about the healthy benefits of foods we, used to slam on, like eggs and chocolate and coffee, and sold that to Oxygen. Pitching the positive power of the peanut, which it seems like all we talk about is the peanut allergy, got her another Oxygen assignment. So when you see something that's a little, counterintuitive, and this works a lot in business too, where if everyone in business is saying, the way to lead is to delegate everything, and you have one on why you should seize the reins and boss people around, you've got a new slant on a leadership story. Linda?
Yeah, and the next thing a good idea needs to be is marketable. And I mean, this sounds obvious, but there's more to it than you would think. When I teach my e-course and we're doing the ideas, I guarantee I will get two things. I will get ideas from people who want to write about grandparenting, and then I will get ideas from people who want to write about parenting teenagers. I get one of these of each of these every single time, because that's just the people who take my class and who want to write are in those age ranges where they have teenagers, where they have grandkids, and they want to write about it. And their ideas are great. They're really fresh. They're really interesting. And unfortunately, I had to tell them, you know, these ideas are great, but there are no markets for these ideas. There are very few magazines that target parents of teens, for example. Most parenting magazines focus on moms of babies up through toddlers and maybe a little bit older, like parenting the school year skews a little bit older. Family Circle targets moms of tweens and teens. That's the only one I know of. It's a notoriously difficult market. And if you're going to go to all the effort to come up with an idea and pitch it, you want to make sure you have at least several magazines that you could possibly send that to. You don't want to put all your eggs in this one basket. And the same goes for grandparenting articles. Everybody says, oh, I can send it to AARP. Well, guess what? You know, I've seen AARP. I've never seen a grandparenting story in there. There is one magazine called Grand for grandparents. Last I heard, they were charging writers $10 to review their queries. So there just aren't a lot of markets for these types of stories. Now, the trick to weeding out ideas that don't have markets like these, because, I mean, on the face of it, they look like great ideas. So the trick is to become a voracious reader of magazines and really learn what's out there. You need to pick up every magazine you can find, you know, at the hairdressers, at the doctors, at the newsstand, read them online, and just kind of get a feel for what's out there. Because I've never wanted to pitch an article about parenting teens, but I've read enough magazines and I know enough about the markets after 15 years that I just intuitively know that there are not that many markets out there for it. So if you do this in practice, you'll start to get a sense of which ideas have markets and which ones don't.
Yeah, you also, when I was writing for a business weekly, you know, I used to get idea pitches from PR people all the time for special sections we were going to do, and it was always too late, you know. But I'm sorry, that gets into our next point, which is that,
you know,
there's enough time. I just wanted to get into that. Sorry.
Yeah, do you want to do it? Because I was going to say the same thing. It's funny. I was going to say, you know, I hate when I get these pitches from PR people, and it's like May, and they're going, oh, I have a great idea for a Mother's Day story. And I'm like, are you serious? They were doing Mother's Day stories 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Most magazines, yeah.
In the last Blast Off class we did, actually, we had someone who had a really cute pitch on something, and it was like November, and it was like a holiday story. And she was like, I need to hurry up and do this. And I was like, I've got some bad news for you, you know, that it's way over all of that content.
Yeah,
so,
in June.
Yeah, this is and even the big magazines, it's 6 months ahead. And even the smaller ones, even, you know, things like News Weeklies, if it's for a special section, they produce those way ahead as well. So it's just one of the commonest errors that I see is that people do not conceptualize how far ahead you want to think. In the summer, you want to be thinking about winter stories, and in the winter, you want to think about summer stories. And, you know, it's just sad to see how many of these end up getting spiked just because it's not at the right time. And, you know, just create a little calendar for yourself to remind yourself when it's time to think about these holidays so that you get on top of this. So on to our next big section, now that you know what is a good idea, which is where to find ideas. There are two big places that a lot of story ideas come from, and the first one is just your own life. Starting with your job, and not just the job you have now, but all the jobs you've ever had. I personally have gotten a ton of work off of having been a legal secretary in the past and having just sort of a familiarity with legal documents, and you know, that has given me an in to write a lot of stories about big lawsuits and bankruptcies. And so there's so many ways you can leverage that past experience. If you work in retail, you are touching, you know, a ton of different issues that a ton of different magazines might be interested in, from, you know, products, marketing, sales, displays, signage, store design. I actually just wrote a store design story. If you've been a psychiatrist, you know, an article in the latest treatments for depression would be perfect for you, especially when you're breaking in, if you don't have a lot of clips. Looking in your life experience areas is a really good way to make the case that you are, you know, the person to assign. And especially when you start looking at trade magazines, there is like no past job too boring or menial to provide you with a valuable piece of background. If you were a receptionist in a dentist's office, you know, you could be writing for a dental trade publication about something. So there's just a million ways to make use of this hobbies you have also. We had one woman in the Blastoff class who her hobby was metalsmithing, was like jewelry making. And, you know, what a great technical area that not many writers know about. And, you know, maybe there's, I mean, there are jewelry trade pubs, but then there's also, you know, shopping guides in big magazines. So there's so many different ways to use it. If you are a college graduate, whatever your degree was in might be another subject area to look at for ideas. But one of the things I like to do when I'm stuck, and I was once ordered to do this as an exercise, is just, you know, get up and walk around. But Linda, I think you wanted to talk more about hobbies.
Yeah, I did want to mention that, like you were saying with your job, it's not just the hobby you have now, but all the hobbies you've ever had. I used to do a lot of martial arts. I was doing it like 20 hours a week. And I stopped about 7 years ago, and I still write about martial arts. I've written about martial arts for USA Weekend and Oxygen, and I still write for ATA World, which is the magazine, the American Taekwondo Association. So really tap into that. Think about the hobbies that you've had, the things that you've done. There are magazines that cover that, or you could spin that into different ideas. For example, when I wrote for USA Weekend, the idea I had was how to match the right martial art to your kid's personality. So there are various ways you can spin all of this stuff, your hobby, your jobs, your education, and so on.
And, yeah, so back to the walking around one. I was getting ahead of myself there. So, yeah, I was once ordered to do this as an exercise, and I really recommend it anytime you feel like, oh, I don't have any ideas. Get up, walk or drive to your main drag of your latest town and walk around for half an hour and talk to people, look at what's happening, go in shops, you know, what is for sale, what is on sale, are there empty shops, are there new stores, what's the busiest one, where are people going, what are people talking about as you're walking around. One of my favorite habits is to just sort of listen in on conversations. I used to ride the ferry to work, and sometimes I just close my eyes and sort of listen to the conversations going on in different, you know, in all the seats around me. And it's just a great way to pick up on what's going on. But, you know, if you think you can't find story ideas, I just challenge people to take that half-hour walk-around challenge, because you'll be amazed at how many interesting stories you find. And the reason to do that exercise is to just have that insight that story ideas are everywhere. They're just laying there waiting for you to pick them up. When I did that exercise, I came back with like three different ideas, including one that I ended up writing up for my publication on how the Seattle Art Museum had begun renting out some of its art for private parties where you could like have their, you know, Miro print in your house during a party, like just for an event to, you know, seem fabulous, and then you would send it back. News is just really everywhere you look once you get tuned in to where to look. Linda?
Okay. So also a great place to find ideas is, and it sounds so obvious, is print and online publications. Ideas are not copyrightable, so you can take an idea you see in one magazine and sell it to another magazine. For example, my husband read an article about the International Wife Carrying Competition in Maine, and this was basically guys who would carry their wives on their back or do this crazy hold that was called the Ukrainian hold, I think. You need to look it up and take a look at it. It's weird. And so this was in Reader's Digest, and he sold a piece on it to Games Magazine. So you don't want to just list an idea wholesale, though. You don't want to say, okay, you know, here's an article on the International Wife Carrying Competition, I'm going to write the exact same thing, but it was a short in Reader's Digest, and I think he did it as a feature in Games. So, you know, it's kind of changing it and slanting it so it's different. Your local paper also is full of news about interesting people and businesses that magazine readers want to hear about. For example, a lot of women's magazines, they do those stories of hometown heroes. Those are pitched by writers often out of their local newspapers. They say, oh, here's something about Jane Smith, who's a, you know, doing an organic community garden for at-risk students. And they'll pitch that to Redbook and sell it. So you really need to just take a look at all the magazines and just become, like I was saying before, become a voracious reader of all different publications. You can also find a lot of ideas from news release services. There are a lot of organizations, universities, businesses, think tanks, government offices, and they distribute news releases to the press, and a lot of times you can get on their press list. And then there are places that consolidate press releases. There's one that you'll see in the resource guide called Eureka Alert that has press releases on science, including health and mathematics and atmospheric science. PR Newswire, which will also be in the resource list, has press releases on all sorts of topics like health and business. And, you know, whatever topic you're interested in, you can contact the organization that represents it and ask that you put on their press release distribution list. The one caveat here, you do not want to take the topic of a press release and just pitch it to a magazine, because these magazines are getting the same press releases. So you don't want to say, oh, here's a study, I want to write about this study. You got to figure out how to slant that and turn it into a saleable article by making it narrow, by making it broad, or just doing something to make it something that the editor hadn't already thought up herself. Carol?
Yeah, right on. The one resource I put in on the news catcher side is Smart Brief. And Smart Brief is amazing. If you don't have a lot of time to read widely, you can subscribe to a couple of Smart Briefs on your industry, and they go through all of those news releases and give you an email once a day of, you know, the 10, 15 best, most interesting ideas in that vertical. And they have hundreds of Smart Briefs to choose from that you can subscribe to. Now that I'm covering franchising for Forbes, I'm heavily reliant on the International Franchising Association's Smart Brief Alert. And, you know, between that and I subscribed to a couple of magazines that do daily alerts, Fast Casual Magazine and QSR, between those three sources, I'm practically set. So, you know, those are great shortcuts, where instead of you compiling and scanning dozens and dozens and dozens of sources, if you can find something like that that's a fit for your niche of interest, it can be a really big time saver. So I think we've covered most of what's on this slide, except for having your antenna up for scandals, problems, and failures, because people just love when other people screw up. And a recent example has been the revealing of the fact that the CEO of Yahoo had embellished his resume and I think said he was a graduate of a place he hadn't graduated from. These, you know, are a news peg that you can spin any number of different ways. Maybe I would pitch that to a business magazine about how your company can handle a, you know, negative news problem, you know, that sort of crisis communications. So just know that, you know, those get closely read. People love it when other people mess up, and we love to know what we can learn from that and how we can avoid that happening to us. So just a great area to watch for as you're skimming materials. But I just want to say that, you know, I read super widely, and, you know, I get more than 100 emails a day of different news releases, and I'm just constantly skimming, you know, everywhere you go. If you're sitting in a hospital waiting room, that hospital puts out a magazine. Start looking at it. it just really helps you. It helps you soak up the tone of magazine style and how they source. It just will really help you. So, okay, Linda, talk about how to steal ideas.
Because as I was saying with the press releases and the magazines, you don't want to just take an idea from a magazine, newspaper, press release, report, whatever, and then just just reiterate the information in a pitch. So a good way to find a new slant that will turn into a saleable idea is to read the press release, magazine, and so on, and ask yourself, what's missing? For example, is the current coverage lacking some valuable information? You can also ask yourself, what will happen next? This is talking about what's happening now, but is there an emerging trend here? That's something I'm doing. I'm actually, you mentioned QSR magazine, Carol. I actually write for QSR and their sister publication. And there was an article in the Chicago Tribune about what this guy dubbed Nitro Pubs, which are restaurants that have really serious food, but also kind of a club-like atmosphere, you know, hard-hitting music and cocktails. And they want me to do an article on what's next. Is this a trend? Not just there's this thing called Nitro Pubs. So that's the kind of thing you want to be doing. Another thing you can do is figure out how you can kind of combine two ideas. And this is why it's a great idea to do what Carol does and read widely, because those ideas are going to start floating around in your head and combining in really interesting ways. I sold one of my first national articles this way back in, I think it was 1999. I was reading the headlines on covers at the bookstore of the women's magazines, which I really wanted to break into. And I noticed that every cover had either the word orgasm or the word diet on it. And I combined them, and I sold the Better Orgasm Diet to Redbook. It was about what kind of foods to eat to boost your libido. It was one of my first national sales. It made TV news. I mean, it was just really great. And, Carol, you have a couple of other ways to re-slant those ideas you find.
Yeah, well, the most basic way to make something new out of a story you're looking at is to either nationalize a local story or localize a national story. And that's one of my personal favorite things to do. You know, often we hear from writers who'll say, oh, well, I saw this magazine covered this issue, so now that story idea is taken. Just get that idea out of your head, because every publication has a different audience, it reaches different people, and story ideas go all over the news cycle. You know, you'll hear TV news people talking about something getting pulled completely through the news cycle. It means it appears everywhere. You know, everyone's going to cover it. So, you know, don't feel like you can't jump on an idea that's already out there. For instance, I'm making a national story local. You might see an article about, in a national food magazine about star chefs who are creating highbrow versions of lowbrow food. And, you know, maybe you have one chef in your town who's doing that, and you could do a profile of them for your local city magazine and then talk about how this is a national trend and, you know, here's our local guy who's doing it. Making a local story national, as Linda said, is frequently done. One that I keep wanting to do is in my tiny little, like, local business journal for my rural county I live in. They did a story about, like, a 10-year-old girl who's making and selling bracelets to raise money for, you know, cancer charities because she has a friend who has cancer. And, you know, she's making a lot of sales. It's become a popular item with, like, tweener girls. And my daughter gets American Girl magazine, you know, published by the folks who make those dolls. And I keep wanting to take the time to sell that to them because they do a couple profiles in the front of the magazine each time about, you know, girls in this age demographic that are doing something great. So, you know, that to me is a perfect fit for them. And in the handout, you're going to get another example of another story that that Linda's husband, Eric, nationalized from a local story. On to the 7 most popular types of story ideas. Or types of stories.
Okay, and I'll do the first one. It is service pieces.
Well, before we go into that, I just want to say, you know, there are a lot of different types of stories, but there are some really common types that you see over and over, and it can really help your pitch if you know what type you're pitching, and you can kind of express that in your pitch, because then editors can quickly see where this would belong in the magazine. It's just, and it's a shorthand that makes you look more pro if you know about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first one is service pieces, which is my specialty. These are how-to articles, and they're really popular in health magazines, business, and women's magazines. you might do an article on how to lose weight or how to organize your home or how to boost your business profits or how to choose an insurance package or just so many different things you can do. And they're called service pieces because they offer what's called service to the readers. They also call it kind of a take-home value. What can the reader take from this, take it home, and do right now that they learn from your article to improve their lives or their situation? Another really popular type of article, and another one I really like to do, is reported essays. And I know a lot of writers want to write essays and sell them to magazines, but there are so few markets for them these days. But reported essays are like essays. They have that first-person element, but they also, it's combined with service. So they include service in the way of quotes and advice from experts that readers can learn from. So I wrote a reported essay for Women's Health called I Was a Self-Help Junkie. And it was kind of an essay because it started off with my story of how I had moved to a new town and I hadn't made a lot of friends and I was kind of lonely. So I was reading books like How to Make Friends and Influence People instead of actually going out and meeting people. And then I interviewed experts to talk about, you know, why there's a problem with becoming a self-help junkie, how to know if you are one and how to get over it. And then it ended with how I improved my situation and I kicked the habit. So it kind of comes full circle, has that narrative arc like an essay, but it also has the service to it. And a lot of magazines do run these. Another type of article that's very popular is called TK Ways. And TK in magazine talk stands for to come. And I've heard various reasons why it's K instead of C for come. So you can look that up because there's just a lot of different reasons. But in a TK Way article, the TK, the to come, is a number. So it might be 10 ways to market your business on a shoestring, 5 ways to walk off the weight, 40 different gifts for under $40. They are really popular in service magazines, and the only caveat when you pitch these is that you need to come up with a number that you can fulfill. You know, if you're going to say you're going to talk about 10 different ways to do X and you get the assignment and you can only find 5 different ways, you're in trouble. So that's one thing you have to keep in mind. And Carol, you want to talk about FOBs.
Yeah. That's short for front of the book. And if you look at most magazines and even sometimes, you know, news weeklies and things, you will find the front, the first section is full of a bunch of short things. You know, I'm just reading Vanity Fair now, and they go practically halfway through the magazine with full short things before they settle into their features. And this is a great place to break in at a new magazine, because these pieces are really short. Sometimes they're 200 words. It's like 4 paragraphs, or 300. That's a typical front of the book size piece. So the editor is just taking a lot less risk by assigning you something like that. If it doesn't work out, it's not that hard for them to plug a 300 word hole, you know. Whereas if they assign you some 1500 word feature and you stiff, you know, they are in a terrifying situation. So this is often how they get you started, is they give you these front of the books. Sometimes they're little bitty profiles of just sort of someone who's done one interesting new thing. They might be a breaking news story that the magazine really wants to be on record that they, you know, presented to people, that it didn't look like they didn't know about it, but they don't really have time to flesh it into a feature, so they just want to throw it into a little front of the book thing. Utney Reader does that a lot. And it could be just a new product, a new toy, a new, you know, iPhone accessory. You think of Look What We Found in the Oprah magazine, if you've ever seen all the items they do at the beginning about interesting products. So those are, it's a great, I just think most writers, when they think about writing for a magazine, they think about writing a giant feature piece. But if you can think of ideas for FOBs, you can really up your odds of getting a first assignment. So roundups are where you might take one of those, it's where you give information or you profile sort of several similar things. So instead of writing about one cool vacation destination for dog lovers, you collect 4 or 5 of them around the country and you've got, you know, 3 cool hotels that welcome your dog. Rather than profiling one chef who specializes in Scandinavian food, you find 5. These are really popular, and it's basically like you took the concept of one of these short front-of-the-book things, and you just found several people who fit it, and you blow it into, and next thing you know, it's a 500-word feature. And I just did one of these recently for allbusiness.com that was Secrets of Million-Dollar Startups. I happened to get pitched by a number of people close together who what they had in common was they had started their business and within the first year they had brought in $1 million of revenue, which is quite unusual in the world of startups. So I just, it was like five companies I just interviewed them each. How'd you do it? That was the story. So pretty simple. So number six is profiles. They can be of a person. Sometimes they're even of a place. I did a profile of the Pediatric Interim Care Center in Seattle, which one of my children happened to spend several weeks in when she was born. Often they're a public figure of some kind. They maybe there's an anniversary of when they founded their business, or they're giving a bunch of money to a charity. They have a new move, a new business startup. One of the greatest things with any prominent person is to do a where are they now profile. Where they've been out of the public eye and now they're kind of trying to make a comeback. People love to read those. And a couple I just wanted to grab. I did one recently where I talked to Barbara Corcoran because she's on Shark Tank and she had a new book coming out. So she's been interviewed a million other times, but, you know, the book gave it a new news peg. And one I just grabbed off of Forbes yesterday is someone did a profile of the woman who got the gig to photograph Mark Zuckerberg's of Facebook's wedding. And she talked about what that did for her business. So I think those are give you an idea of sort of the variety of ways profile stories kind of come about. And I'm sorry, is this me? Oh, yeah, this is me because I added this to this.
It has your name on it.
Yeah, so this is the end of the road, you know, the big kahuna, the big feature story that explores an issue or a concept in depth. And usually, quite often, you already have a relationship with the publication before you're ending up writing one of these. I had written some front of the book for Seattle Magazine before writing the two features I've got up on this slide. One day I was just looking at the recycling bins at the sidewalk and I said, you know, where does that stuff go? And I wrote a feature, a 3,000 word feature, and I followed those trash cans. One of them went way up north to a compost place and one of them went to the middle of Oregon to the dump. And it was an amazing, amazing story to report. And then I did another one on problems in the Washington State foster care system, where I interviewed many. The big thing about these feature stories is they usually involve many interviews. You know, you're talking, maybe you're talking to 8, 10, 12 different people to put that story together. Or, you know, it was an incredible feature recently that I think won the Pulitzer was the one about people who accidentally leave their babies in the car and forget they're there and they die, and about whether that's a crime or a tragedy. You know, should they be tried and jailed? And the writer, it's an amazing, amazing piece. I'll have to send you all a link to it now that I've mentioned it. Talked to dozens and dozens and dozens of people, including many families who had done this about it. So, you know, feature stories are the big prize winners. So quickly, because I want to get to more questions, Linda and I are just going to throw out a few more ideas and how we got them. Go, Linda.
Yeah, so I get a lot of ideas by mining my own life. And 3 years ago, we adopted our son as a newborn in Phoenix. And we decided on an open adoption with the birth mother, Rebecca. So we exchanged emails. We've had the occasional phone calls. We exchanged pictures. We've really gotten to know one another. And just from talking with her, I knew for the first while, and even longer, how difficult the adoption was on her. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we could do an essay together for a parenting magazine where we each take different milestones of the adoption, like when she found out she was pregnant and when she decided to choose us for the adoption and when we talked on the phone for the first time and wrote about them from our different viewpoints, because we would have very different viewpoints of these same things. I pitched it to parenting. I sold it. Rebecca is an amazing writer. We came up with a great essay. Unfortunately, the magazine changed over its entire editorial staff, and we got paid, but it has never run, which is really unfortunate. But that's just an example of how you can get ideas from pretty much anything that has happened to you.
Yeah, right on. So in my notes, I only seem to have one of my other story ideas. I think you'll see these others in the handout. But I just want to say that if you have a sort of non-parallel topic, you can end up writing about it just over and over. And I have this dorky business finance topic called ratio analysis of your business's financials. And I've written it just over and over for different magazines. I took a course on it at a trade show, like a three-hour class on how you do it once. And I've just been reusing that information. My most recent sale is I sold it to the Facebook fan page of a Canadian telecommunications giant that has a small business fan page that they're building for their business. So, you know, you just can't believe how these will keep rolling and, you know, have a new life. Linda, I think you were talking about, reslenting and reselling.
So we do want to talk a little bit about reselling your ideas, and we actually titled this section, It Never Ends, because you can reslant your ideas forever. I mean, once you've done the research, you know, reuse that research. And I have to admit, I am lazy about this. Don't be like me. When I do an idea often, I just feel like I'm kind of done with it. But the smart writer, who is not me, doesn't keep pitching one-off ideas. He reslants his ideas and sells them to different markets. And I have done this a couple of times. For example, I found a study on employee absenteeism, and I pitched it to a credit union magazine and sold it, and then I later sold it to a restaurant trade magazine. So same topic, different industries. And as long as the two magazines aren't competing, it's really no problem to sell the same idea. So a credit union magazine and a restaurant magazine, you know, these two audiences are not going to mix. They're not going to read the other magazine most likely. Another example is selling rights to a certain area of the United States. So if you sell an article to a local parenting magazine like Chicago Baby, you can sell a reprint to a parenting magazine that covers another area like Atlanta Baby. And a lot of these local, you know, these regional parenting magazines run a lot of reprints.
So here is the story idea homework. Now that you've learned all about how to find and develop a good story idea, start finding story ideas. And then what we want you to do is choose your favorite and post it in the homework forum in the Den and answer three questions for us about it. What makes it newsworthy? What makes it unique? And what three markets are appropriate for it? And answering those three questions should really help you develop the story idea too, because if you can't think of why a magazine should run it now or what slant you're giving it that, you know, magazines haven't already done a million times, that's going to help you refine your ideas. And if you will post your idea with those three questions, we will review it in the Den.